making 2010 a year of improvement for general aviation. What will it take? I'm Paul Platt, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot. Available every month on the web. We'll tell you more about that later. Bob, thanks for being here.
Oh, my pleasure as always, Paul.
I wanted to start off 2010, Bob, with an article that is going to lead off your January issue of Over the Airwaves, and it's called Being the Best. And you ask the general question, will 2010 be a better or worse year for us than 2009? And you go back and tie that largely to our own attitude and what we do more than what we say. What prompted you to write this one?
You know, like so many of us spending time going through the internet and going through various forums, it became apparent or readily apparent to me that we spend a lot of time either complaining about the actions of others or blaming our situation on either high fuel prices or bad economy or current politicians in office. And it seemed to me that if you look at greatness, individuals who have achieved greatness in any field, whether it's sports, aviation, medicine, or whatnot, if you study those lives, you will see that behind that success was a concerted effort to focus on the things themselves internally, inward, and practice those things in such a way that we put blinders on those outside forces and look inward to see who and what we are and what we can do to make ourselves better.
All right, you put it in terms of look at the things you can change, not blame external forces that you cannot change.
Yeah, for example, just from an aviator perspective, if we truly wanted to become a proficient instrument pilot, what we have to do is go out, obviously, and fly in instruments, but we have to do so with a purpose and or an intent. When I first started flying on instruments, I considered it a good day if I could get from point A to point B without being criticized by ATC for some misstep or misaction on my part. And that was somewhat of a gross effort to improve. But today, when I fly on instruments, truly I try to master the game so that rather than sloppily coming down with arrows or needles pointing all over the place on the HSI, come down with centered needles. I mean, focused on centered needles. Master the art of fine trimming the airplane, using throttle to control altitude, and just become a student of your own performance in conducting any kind of flight procedure that you're engaged in, whether it be landing or, as I said, shooting approaches on instruments or developing crosswind. Just between you and yourself, focus on what you're doing in such a way that you can simply master that technique without the extraneous forces and blaming others and the situation outside of those areas that we can control.
Okay, in that environment, you're talking about not blaming things like crosswinds or visibility conditions and working on the things you can affect, such as your skill in navigating by instruments. You also mention a book called Who Moved My Cheese, which was very popular a few years ago. Spencer Johnson wrote it. And what is the analogy in that book that we should pay attention to as pilots?
Well, in that particular book, we have an example where the author gives us a maze where rats or mice were always could go down certain avenues in the maze and always find food at the end of a particular series of turns. And in the experiment, all of a sudden, there's no food. The individual controlling the experiment removed the food. And the observer now looks to see what do the mice do. Some of the mice just basically sit there and starve, while other mice start going down other avenues and other paths in such a way as to find other opportunities. We can have setbacks in aviation. It could be difficulty in mastering landings, or difficulty in crosswind, or fear of flying at night, or an avoidance of flying in low IFR conditions. These conditions exist. Night exists. Low IFR conditions exist. Crosswinds exist. And so what we can do is either we can become fearful of these conditions and avoid them wherever possible, or step up to the plate and just simply go in and master them. You know, we have a principle of learning called primacy of learning. That which we learn first, we tend to retain longest and learn best. I remember taking my private pilot certificate primarily at night. That was when I could train after work in the wintertime, and as a result, night flight doesn't particularly bother me at all. I'm not a real fan of overwater flight, but I never spent much time training over water until I had opportunity to do so. And you become more comfortable at those things that you become better at. Keeping score, seeing how well you do, it continues to come back to focus on those things that you can control and remove from your attention those areas that you cannot control.
There's a popular book and DVD series called The Secret that deals with the law of what's called the law of attraction. And it presents as a sort of cosmic force the notion that whatever you focus on will grow. You know, whatever you pay most attention to and talk about most will be where your life heads. And therefore, if you talk about negative things, you'll attract negative friends, you'll have negative outcomes, and, you know, you'll lead yourself down that path. While some people, despite adversity, manage to stay positive and surround themselves with positive influences and move in that direction. And I think
I would buy into that 100%. I mean, particularly in the wintertime when we go to the local airport, sit around the coffee pot and listen to who's talking positively and who is, you know, bashing somebody else or bashing another system. If you look at those that are doing the bashing, typically they're the sorry folks who themselves are not particularly adept at doing anything very good. I myself, when I go into a room full of people like that and we start hearing that kind of negative talk, the best thing I can do for myself is just to leave, go find someplace else to go and to talk. But that, you know, the old saying that if you keep score, the score gets better. I think that's absolutely true. Tony Robbins, a professional motivator, talks about something called neuro-linguistic programming. And very simply, he says, if you want to become the master of a particular activity, study the master. If you want to become a great golfer, then find the greatest golfer and study exactly what that individual does. Emulate every move and every action of that particular master, whatever it might be. In aviation, here again, we can look at great aviators. Bob Hoover, for example, is a role model of mine. If only I could fly with the ease and dexterity that he flies, and flying in you know, fully coordinated fashion. This is the master that many of us would be well advised to follow. Those that are listening to this podcast presumably are out there trying to learn something from somebody else who may have taken a subject and done pretty well at it. All of us need to find role models that we can use in aviation. You may have them right there at your own airport. An individual who is particularly adept at flying certain kind of maneuvers or on instruments or aerobatics or whatever it is that we want to do. These are the things that we can control, Paul, and stay away from those things that we can't control. I think that's the best, only way I can say it and be convincing.
All right. Well, when we come back from the break, Bob, I want to change topic here. And we've talked about electronic aids to flying, and you have a lesson regarding over-reliance on one of them. We'll be back in a moment. My guest is Bob Miller. I'm Paul Plack. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
This is a story of two pilots. Our first guy, the one with Garmin Waas GPS, he just arrived home from a trip, ready to enjoy a nice home-cooked meal with his supermodel girlfriend.
Chérie, viens près de moi.
But our other guy, the pilot without Waas, well, he couldn't quite make it home. Had to divert to an airport with an ILS approach. So now it's dinner from a vending machine in some crummy pilot's lounge. You know which pilot you want to be. Garmin Waas GPS. Follow the leader.
Chérie.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 G2. Interested in a substantial airplane that remains practical and affordable? Whether you're a non-pilot looking to begin flying lessons, a pilot needing personal transportation, or a fleet customer selecting the best plane to meet the demands of a multiple aircraft operation, consider the SR20 G2. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News Special Feature. Paul Plack here with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the Journal for the Proficient Pilot. And Bob, in the January edition, you have an article coming up that talks about an accident that you blame on over-reliance on an electronic flight bag. Bob, first, tell us about the accident, and then I have a couple of questions about your conclusion.
This was a particularly interesting accident, as all accidents are, and unfortunately they're also very tragic, particularly when there's a loss of life. But we need to learn what we can from these. And this particular accident involved a Beech Bonanza pilot who had taken off into IFR conditions and, according to the NTSB, had lost control in an attempt to shoot or to fly an instrument approach and attempt to go around. The NTSB report does not give us a lot of information as to what went wrong, but they did make note of the fact that the pilot had been proudly telling friends and colleagues prior to the accident about his newly acquired electronic flight bag, or EFB. An electronic flight bag, as most of our listeners know, is an electronic tablet about the size of a 8.5 by 11 piece of paper that contains electronically displayed approach plates, instrument approach plates. Now, what might be have taken place here had this pilot been using this particular device, this EFB, in place of traditional standard approach plates, and perhaps had difficulty programming it, or perhaps had difficulty with the batteries, or perhaps it did not come up to the right display, or he couldn't get the right display loaded. For one reason or another, the individual, who had been an experienced pilot otherwise, did lose control on the approach, and unfortunately, it cost him his life. And the point I'm trying to raise is, you know, these electronic devices that we have in the airplane, electronic gadgets, as I sometimes call them, and I know I've been very vocal about having some like the iPhone in the airplane, but these are designed or intended to be supplementary sources of information, not primary sources of information. An iPhone is great on the ground to get the last latest word on the weather. These electronic flight bags are useful perhaps to review or to brief a plate, but when it comes down to actually flying a procedure, unless we're very, very proficient on these devices, it's best to go back to those traditional sources of information, in this case, paper approach plates that we've been using all along. It's just a question of developing a skill or a mastery at the device, and then keeping in mind what we're going to do if, for example, the electronic flight bag or the electronics in the bag fail us. What are we going to do at that critical moment in time?
Is there anything better? Is there any possible better combination than something like a G1000 with an overlaid plate that you can actually see yourself and your path on the plate?
That is a useful device, and I would take that out of the category of gadgetry and handheld devices. And it's a panel-mounted device, and it's there, and it's got a much more reliable source of power. It's integrated into the electronic suite of the airplane. Those types of devices I would place great reliance on, and I have. But even with those, Paul, I always have paper approach plates in hand, mounted on the yoke, even when I'm using those in the G1000 to shoot an approach with. The handheld devices, the electronic flight bags, I mean, these are prone to, you know, falling between the seats, not being able to, they're not mounted on anything in particular, so that it's difficult to push the buttons in a reliable fashion. So I think we have to make a distinction between what is panel-mounted and what falls into that handheld category. Now, as I say this, I don't want to discredit the electronic flight bag. I think they have a tremendous potential for our use in the cockpit. But again, if we're going to use those as our sole source of information, we better have a plan as to what to do if, for some reason, that device doesn't work.
All right. Well, I have to say this is going to be a raging debate for a while, because obviously if you have one of these and you've come up with the outlay of cash to get one and are updating it regularly, duplicating it all in paper is cumbersome and expensive.
Well, it is. And I know that some of the airlines and some of the freight carriers have been converting their paper plates to using these devices. And it just speaks to the absolute necessity of training with them, becoming proficient with them, knowing how to troubleshoot them very quickly. They are very reliable, but let's not place over-dependence on them without developing mastery of their use.
Well, it probably doesn't hurt to have somebody in the right seat who's got another one.
Mm-hmm.
Just so you have some redundancy, too. Well, Bob, as always, we appreciate your insights. We will look for you again next Monday.
Thanks, Paul.
You can read the January issue of Bob Miller's newsletter at www.overtheairwaves.com. You'll also find an option to receive an email notice whenever a new issue comes out. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.